content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to our September 2024 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately, a program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons, all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in this program. This program is all about books available from the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library also has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. And if you're not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information about that at the end of this program as well. Now, this month, we'll take a look at some of the most popular books checked out in the month of August at the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. We begin the program today with a very popular name. The author is John Grisham, and the book is a new one called Camino Ghosts. And I'm going to be reading from a review by Stuart Schiffman that was done just at the end of May in 2024. Most readers associate John Grisham with courtroom novels. Some of his best-known works have involved deep dives into the world of noble attorneys and the American justice system with all its flaws. But Grisham is not content to simply turn out legal-themed stories on a regular basis. His success allows him substantial latitude in the books he writes and the subjects he covers. In 2017's Camino Island, Grisham introduced readers to the eponymous fictional island off the coast of Florida. In the small resort town of Santa Rosa, we met Bruce Cable, the owner of an independent bookstore and a dealer in rare books, and Mercer Mann, an author struggling to complete a second novel following the success of her debut. 3 years later, Grisham gave us a follow-up, Camino Winds, and now we can celebrate his third Camino release. Camino Ghosts begins on the beach at Camino Island, where Mercer and Thomas celebrate their wedding with close friends. Mercer, who is an important character in the series, is also a creative writing teacher at the University of Mississippi. Now, in addition to allowing Grisham to promote his alma mater, Mercer's work as a novelist affords him the opportunity to enlighten readers on how the publishing industry operates. Mercer is planning to write and publish a book based on the lives of a group of black Africans transported to America as slaves. Their travel to the South is interrupted by storms, and they end up on a small barrier island off the coast known as Dark Isle. There they live secretly for centuries as free individuals until new storms eventually make it uninhabitable. Bruce hopes that Mercer can turn these events into a book. For the story to be told, Mercer must work with Lovely Jackson, an 80-year-old black woman who is the last surviving heir of Dark Isle. It will not be an easy task. Now, the history of Dark Isle is mysterious. No one has populated it for centuries, and legends abound as to why that is. Many are convinced that the area is cursed, and that belief is encouraged when a land developer emerges with plans to build residences, a golf course, and a casino on the island. But the situation becomes a little dicey when those sent to begin the development meet with death. To add to the mystery, there's one more Grisham ingredient for a great story, a lawsuit over who actually owns Dark Isle. It's a typical Grisham novel. The bad guys have big plans while the good guys hope to stop them. Along the way, Grisham shows his talent for poking fun at the foibles of publishing, as well as the legal system. It's a gentle poking, since both of these enterprises have provided him with a permanent and deserved position on bestseller lists. Camino Ghosts is a joyful adventure. The characters are well known to Grisham fans, and the story will keep you turning the pages until the conclusion. It's a great summer read from a gifted writer. And that review was done as the summer was beginning, of course, by Stuart Schiffman on May 31st, 2024. Once again, the name of that book is Camino Ghosts, a brand new one by John Grisham. Now let's take a look at another new book by a very well-known author whose name you'll recognize, of course. This is Eruption by James Patterson, and this is a review by Ray Palin that was done in June of this year. What happens when you team up two legendary writers? You get what could be one of the best and most incendiary novels of 2024. One day, Michael Crichton's widow, Sherry, was going through the folder of stories and found an unfinished manuscript titled The Black Zone. Along with that was extensive research on volcanoes, specifically volcanic eruptions. She sat on this information for years, hoping to find the ideal author to take over the project. Then she was introduced to James Patterson, who eagerly agreed to dive in and pick up where her late husband left off. The result is the wonderfully thrilling Eruption, which just cries out for cinematic treatment from page one. The action opens in 2016 in Hilo, Hawaii. Rachel Sherrill is taking her class on a tour of the Hilo Botanical Gardens when she notices a group of sick trees. Now, before she can speak to someone there about it, an announcement is made requesting that everyone evacuate the premises due to strong suspicion of a possible eruption from the surrounding mammoth volcanoes, Mauna Loa and Mauna Kea. We then jump ahead to April 24, 2025. No one is aware yet that they are just 116 hours away from the massive eruption that could wipe out all of Hilo, and then some. John Mack McGregor of the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory is monitoring the situation closely and deciding how soon to warn the locals by updating the volcanic alert level. A helicopter is getting way too close to the volcanic flow and going down. This is just the start of the nonstop action that is Eruption, complete with a chapter-by-chapter countdown towards the big blast. Once Max saves the day, he begins discussing with his team what they can do to avoid the tragedy that occurred during the last big eruption, which was in 1984. Creating man-made vents in the mountains is proposed, but that is easier said than done and has never been tried. Before Mac can put any large-scale plan into motion, he is interrupted by the appearance of Colonel James Briggs from the local military base. Now, Briggs shares top-secret information about a venture known as Project Hades, or Agent Black. It involves the creation of a military chemical weapon far more powerful than Agent Orange. The worst part is that tons of cylinders containing Agent Black have been stored for years in one of the nearby mountains as sort of a giant chemical waste receptacle. If the military, with some local assistance, is unable to remove all of these cylinders before the volcanoes erupt, the product that will be released into the atmosphere will be strong enough to wipe out every living thing on Earth. Now, this will make readers think back to Rachel's discovery of blackened plant life in 2016 that reveals just some of the deadly potential of Agent Black. Mac and his team are now in a literal race against time, not only to get the surrounding residents prepared to evacuate, but to assist the military in removing all of the Agent Black materials while building huge barriers and reinforcements to quell the lava flow. Along with the constantly depleting time clock we see at the top of each chapter, Crichton and Patterson have created a situation that will not allow readers to catch their breath as the pages turn by themselves. It's a traumatic race to the finish where not everyone will survive and the fate of the entire globe is at risk. In other words, failure is not an option. Eruption is so much more than just a great summer read. It combines the impeccable research and scientific knowledge that Crichton consistently infused into everything he wrote with the breakneck suspense of a James Patterson novel. In true Patterson style, the chapters are short and have the impact of jabs from a prize fighter who is setting you up for the knockout punch. When it arrives, hold on to your seats because Eruption is a wild ride that takes no prisoners. That review, as I mentioned, was done by Ray Palin in June of 2024. And once again, that book, and it sounds like a good one, is called Eruption by James Patterson. Now let's move on to a new book called Swan Song by Ellen Hildebrand. The beloved number one New York Times bestselling author brings her Nantucket novels to a brilliant finish. When rich strangers move to the island, social mayhem and a possible murder follow. Can Nantucket's best local save the day and their way of life? Here's the plot for this one. It's called Swan Song. Chief of Police Ed Kapanash is about to retire. Blonde Sharon is going through a divorce. But when a $22 million summer home is purchased by the mysterious Richardsons, how do they make their money exactly? Ed, Sharon, and everyone in the community are swept up in high drama. The Richardsons throw lavish parties, flirt with multiple locals, flaunt their wealth with not one but two yachts, and raise impossible hopes of everyone they meet. When their house burns to the ground and their most essential employee goes missing, the entire island is up in arms. The last of Ellen Hildebrand's best-selling Nantucket novels, Swan Song, is a propulsive medley of glittering gatherings, sun-soaked drama, wisdom and heart, featuring the return of some of her most beloved characters, including, most importantly, the beautiful and timeless island of Nantucket itself. Hard to believe this is the end of that Nantucket series, isn't it? This is called Swan Song, and it is by the beloved author Ellen Hildebrand. Now let's turn to a book called It Ends With Us, and this is by Colleen Hoover. Again, a number one New York Times bestseller. It Starts With Us and All Your Perfects, a brave and heartbreaking novel that digs its claws into you and doesn't let go long after you've finished it. Here's the plot for this one. Lily hasn't always had it easy, but that's never stopped her from working hard for the life that she wants. And she's come a long way from the small town where she grew up. She graduated from college, moved to Boston, and started her own business. And when she feels a spark with a gorgeous neurosurgeon named Ryle Kincaid, everything in Lily's life seems too good to be true. Ryle is assertive, stubborn, maybe even a little arrogant. He's also sensitive, brilliant, and has a total soft spot for Lily. And the way he looks in scrubs certainly doesn't hurt. Lily can't get him out of her head, but Ryle's complete aversion to relationships is disturbing. Even as Lily finds herself becoming the exception to his no-dating rule, she can't help but wonder what made him that way in the first place. As questions about her new relationship overwhelm her, so do thoughts of Atlas Corrigan, her first love, and a link to the past she left behind. She was her kindred spirit, her protector. When Atlas suddenly reappears, everything Lily has built with Ryle is threatened. And once again, that book is called It Ends With Us, and it's by Colleen Hoover. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. I hope you're enjoying the program for today. Right now we're going to take a look at two books. Both of them were on the top list for this past month at the State Library for Accessible Library Services. And these two books are by Freda McFadden. I'm going to start with her book entitled Do Not Disturb. Quinn Alexander has committed an unthinkable crime. To avoid spending her life in prison, Quinn makes a run for it. She leaves behind her home, her job, and her family. She grabs her passport and heads for the northern border before the police can discover what she has done. But when an unexpected snowstorm forces her off the road, Quinn must take refuge at the broken-down, isolated Baxter Motel. The handsome and kindly owner, Nick Baxter, is only too happy to offer her a cheap room for the night. Unfortunately, the Baxter Motel isn't the quiet, safe haven it seemed to be. The motel has a dark and disturbing past, and in the dilapidated house across the way, the silhouette of Nick's ailing wife is always at the window, always watching. In the morning, Quinn must leave the motel. She'll pack up her belongings and get back on the road to freedom. But first, she must survive the night. This one is called Do Not Disturb by Freda McFadden, and I'm going to follow that immediately with another book by Freda McFadden called Do You Remember? Here's the plot for this one. Tess Strebble can't recognize her own face. She can't recognize her home. Her bedroom is unfamiliar, and she can't remember the handsome stranger lying next to her in bed. A stranger who claims he's her husband. Tess reads a letter in her own handwriting, composed during a rare lucid day, explaining her life as it now exists. She was in a terrible car accident 1 year ago. Every morning she wakes up unable to remember most of the last decade, including her own wedding. Tess has no choice but to accept her new life and hope her memory will return. After all, why should she doubt the letter she wrote to herself, or the kind man from the wedding photos on her dresser who seems to genuinely care about her well-being? And then Tess receives a text message on her phone, one that changes everything. Quote, "Don't trust the man who calls himself your husband," unquote. Sounds like quite a mystery to me. It's called Do You Remember? And it's another book this month that was very popular at the library by Freda McFadden. It is very rare to get through an entire program without mentioning at least a couple of books by James Patterson, and that is the case this time around for this month of September. This is a book written in combination with Maxine Petro by James Patterson and Maxine Petro. It is called The 24th Hour, and I'm going to read a review by Ray Palin that was done in May of this year, so it's a new one. As I was reading The 24th Hour, I had the strangest feeling that I was holding two books in my hand. In today's tough economy, two books for the price of one is a pretty good deal. Then I surmised that James Patterson and Maxine Petro must have spun their own separate stories and merged them in this highly unique mashup. The 24th Hour is indeed the 24th entry in the Women's Murder Club series. For the uninitiated, the Women's Murder Club is comprised of SFPD Sergeant Lindsay Boxer, Medical Examiner Claire Washburn, Assistant District Attorney Yuki Castellano, and crime writer Cindy Thomas. Each of these powerful women deals with murder and other crimes on an almost daily basis, so any opportunity for them to get together and share notes on a current case is sure to be explosive and fodder for Cindy's next story. Lindsay, Claire, Yuki, and Cindy are at a restaurant celebrating Cindy's engagement to one of Lindsay's pals, longtime friend and partner Rich Conklin. However, their fun get-together is cut short when they hear screams coming from the second floor. They find a mostly disrobed woman on the ground, obviously the victim of an assault. She utters the troubling words, "He raped us." This leads to a search of the entire place and ends with the discovery of a man with no pants stuffed behind a locker trying to hide. He is Tyler Cates, an employee of the restaurant, who claims that the young lady requested that he engage in rough sex with her in the changing room. Now, the victim's legal name is Mary Elena Hayes. But during her initial interview with the Women's Murder Club, she jumps between names like Loretta and Lily. Mary Elena suffers from and is being treated for dissociative identity disorder, DID, which explains why she referred to herself as us. Her many alters were only appear when she requires protection, which is what happens here. Yuki and her second chair, Nick Gaines, plan to defend Mary Elena in court. They are filled with much trepidation, as most judges and juries do not believe in or support multiple personality disorder as a defense. To take it a step further, prosecutor Ed Schneider is described by Yuki as a pit bull and is not one to give clinical or scientific value to DID should it come up. If any of Mary Elena's alters emerge during the testimony, he will laugh and tear Yuki's case to shreds. To make matters even trickier, there are no medications to handle DID, which also will not help the defense. Cates is not a credible individual by any stretch of the imagination, but Yuki and her legal team are walking a slippery slope. Under normal circumstances, it would be a slam dunk for them. Despite these challenges, things are going well, and the Women's Murder Club is doing their fair share to assist. Thankfully, no issues with unexpected alters have derailed the proceedings just yet. But then, out of the blue, while Mary Elena is testifying, Cates jumps up and begins shouting. His outburst includes accusations that, if true, could blow up the entire case for all involved. As all of this drama is unfolding, Lindsay is investigating the high-profile murder of a billionaire couple. However, while fascinating in its own right, I found myself much more captivated by the DID storyline than I was with this one. I've always been intrigued by fiction revolving around multiple personalities. It provides a great plot point in thrillers and legal-themed novels, and probably was best used in William Deal's 1993 book, Primal Fear. The 24th Hour is another quick and relentless read from the dynamic duo of Patterson and Petro. It is quite unpredictable, and it was a pleasure getting reacquainted with Lindsay, Claire, Yuki, and Cindy. Once again, the book is called The 24th Hour by James Patterson and Maxine Petro, and that was a review by Ray Palin, which was done in May of this year. Now I'm going to read another review by Ray Palin done in May of this year. It's called Think Twice, and it's by Harlan Coben. Fans of the great Harlan Coben, who have been with him since the beginning, proudly recall the Myron Bolitar novels, which dominated his earlier work. Now, those who have never read these books should catch the Amazon Prime video series Shelter, which features a young Myron. With the long-awaited release of Think Twice, we are right back in Myron's world as it exists in 2024. As a sports agent, he finds himself caught up in a murder case that quickly becomes very personal. Just 3 years earlier, Myron was giving a eulogy at the funeral of his client, NBA coach Greg Downing. Myron never had an easy relationship with Greg in the decades they knew each other, but they were able to get past their differences and work together. Myron's world is rocked when FBI agent Monica Hawes enters his Midtown Manhattan office and asks him and his colleague best friend, Wynn Lockford, where Greg is. After the initial shock of such a question wears off, Myron informs Hawes that it must be some sort of joke, as everyone knows that Greg is dead. Hawes indicates that this is what the FBI had been led to believe until his prints were the only outside evidence found at the location of a double homicide. Readers will realize at this point what the cryptic prologue meant, as it depicted someone planting DNA evidence at the site of the two slayings to implicate a third party. The FBI does not know whether or not to believe Myron, so they keep a close eye on him. In the meantime, Myron and Wynn begin in their own investigation that consists of a whirlwind tour around the country to look into these recent crimes and see if there's any possible way that Greg is still alive. More likely, though, they want to find out who is setting him up so they can present that information to the FBI, restore his good name, and move on. Think Twice is about family, friendship, loyalty, secrets, lies, and most of all, the chance for redemption. It also is a sleekly written murder mystery that will have you guessing right up until the end and put you firmly in the shoes of our very plausible and likable protagonist. The book is called Think Twice by Harlan Coben. And that's all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? I'm George Douglas. Hope you enjoyed the program. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the State Library of North Carolina, accessible books and library services, simply Google or search for Accessible Books North Carolina Library or call 888-388-2460. This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long, until next time.